And welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 488 for Wednesday, the 16th of March, 2016. My name is Harry Lloyd, and I will be your spirit guide for this episode. Motopod, hi, we're back. Hello, everyone. Just me, unfortunately, due to a number of combinations, i.e. other people's jobs, my job, having to do a solo show, unfortunately. Obviously me doing what I do. Turns out that preparing for the first Grand Prix of a year makes you pretty busy. So unfortunately we couldn't really figure out a time schedule with everyone else. So big apologies if you were looking forward to hearing from Martin, Jules, Jim, Dave, or myself. Well, I guess I'm here, but you know, the combinations or whatever. But I just want to say a big thank you once again to Martin Darlington for going out to the Qatar test and getting those interviews. It seems like the interviews were well received. As always, Motopod at motopodcast.com for your feedback. It seems like overall the feedback was positive. Unfortunately for us, fortunately for Martin, Martin will just be going to the Qatar GP as a fan. He has a pool party or something that he must attend. I'm not quite sure on the details of that one. Whenever any one of the co-hosts sends an email involving pool party, I sort of ignore that email because who knows where it might lead. But anyway, so this week's show, we have obviously World Superbikes in Thailand. I'm sure a couple of them would have liked to have had a pool party between races. And then we also have the Moto2 and Moto3 test in Qatar. And then also we're going to have my preview of the MotoGP 2016 season, where I make potentially career-ending speculations. I say career-ending because they will probably be so wildly wrong that no one will ever trust me as any sort of motorcycle professional ever. But anyway, I have my nice iced coffee here, so I'm ready for a nice long show with everyone out there in Motopod land. So let's all get comfortable and listen in. A big thank you to everyone who donates and subscribes. Obviously, we really do appreciate, especially those subscriptions. As we said, they recur for 12 months. Once a month really helps us keep trucking along. This month we have Brian Elliott as our new subscriber. So big thank you there, Brian. If you'd like to subscribe or donate, motopodcast.com is the website. Then down on the left-hand side, there's a PayPal link that gets sent to the Motopod coffers, which help keep us trucking along. As we said a couple of shows ago, we are guaranteed to at least be doing this year. And, as we said, we sent Martin to the Qatar test. And as I mentioned, I think it was last show, where we're hoping to do one or two more tests as well. So those donations and subscriptions are as important as ever. And as we say, any little really, really, really does help. A big thank you to Sam Moore for his most generous donation. Hugely appreciated there, Sam. And I'm sure that everyone else on the Motopod team definitely appreciates that one. Not too much news-wise going on as ever. Just ahead of a Grand Prix, or the MotoGP season, as it is. News a bit quiet. It's usually after a couple of races that we start to have some silly season gossip. But, gets earlier and earlier every year. And Bradley Smith has already confirmed that he'll be leaving Monster Yamaha Tech 3 at the end of the year. In a blog that he wrote for MotoGP.com, he mentioned it saying that, yeah, I won't be re-signing. Hervé Poncharal, the team manager, has been given word from high up in Yamaha that Yamaha want to bring through some young blood into that team. So unfortunately, Bradley Smith will have to vacate his seat there. Smith did feel pretty confident about getting something with maybe Suzuki or KTM. And I think that both of those factories would be really good fit for Smith, and that he could do really well by them, especially for KTM. I think that Bradley Smith would add a huge amount of knowledge and development clarity to someone like KTM, who are trying to come back in. With Suzuki, obviously, they could potentially win races this year. It's still quite unknown. It seems like Maverick Vinales on that bike has the potential at least for a podium. But I think that Smith would do well at both those places. Smith said that, he's not ruling out also a move to Honda. He said that he's pretty sure that he won't get a ride in the Yamaha squad, as he feels almost certain that both Jorge Lorenzo and Valentino Rossi will continue there for at least two more seasons. So there we go, Bradley Smith confirming the first piece of the silly season puzzle. It doesn't look like the Movistar Yamaha squad will change according to the Brit. Yeah, we'll see how it goes. You know, silly season, it always gets hyped up like, oh, this is going to be the best season ever. You know, Lorenzo's off to Ducati, yada, yada, yada. But unfortunately is the right word. Unfortunately, silly season never really does anything crazy, apart from obviously when Rossi went to Ducati and then Stoner came over to Honda. That was pretty crazy. But otherwise, it's, you know, it's usually pretty good. You know, when someone's on their way out, you can sort of tell that they're on their way out. I think that, you know, Danny Pedrosa, at least for the past couple of seasons, unfortunately, has sort of been the one of the big question marks. You know, it doesn't look like that Marc Marquez is going to jump ship. Maybe Dovizioso gets pushed out of Ducati if he can't sort of pull his socks up after a bit of a disappointing testing. But, you know, certainly if I were Ducati, I wouldn't be wanting to get rid of Andrea Iannone. If I were either Honda or Yamaha, I'd be pretty eager to get Maverick Vinales. But, you know, even if I were Suzuki, I'd be pretty happy to try and keep Maverick Vinales and hopefully tempt him with whatever he can be tempted with. Aside from those three players, i.e. Smith, Lorenzo and Rossi, there isn't really anything concrete on what anyone else will be doing. We do have some Moto America news with a former MotoGP rider. Nicky Hayden's best friend, Tiger Tony Elias, will be riding at the Moto America Circuit of the Americas test on the bike of Jake Lewis. That's a Suzuki Jixathau. So yeah, Tiger Tony will be doing at least one test as Jake Lewis is out injured. And there's been a rumor that Tony Elias is going to Moto America for a long time. It was rumored that he and Ant West would either go to Moto America or go to BSB. And Claudio Corti has signed to ride in Moto America, so there's already one MotoGP rider out there. And it could be good to see Tony Elias out there. I think that no matter what bike you put Tony Elias on in Moto America, he'd probably be competitive. Tony Elias is the man who can somehow always managed to pull a ride out of somewhere. You know, last year he rode a MotoGP bike for, was it last year or the year before? No, it was last year because Bridle left forward. Yeah. So yeah, Tony Elias, you know, the man who's done both everything and done nothing. Obviously, Moto2 world champion, MotoGP race winner. Still the last satellite victory, I think. 2006 Estoril, that race. Well, that was Tony Elias, right? Yeah, that was Tony Elias because it was Elias. Roberts, and then what's his face, that Rossi dude. I hear he's all right on a motorcycle. Speaking of that Rossi dude, I am recording this on Wednesday, as I said at the top of the show, and due to the weirder schedule of Qatar, we have already had the pre-race MotoGP press conference, and nothing really happened between Marc Marquez and Valentino Rossi. Everyone was very professional. Some journalist asked a question about, you know, are you guys Senna and Prost or Ago and Hailwood? And Rossi sort of just laughed and said, oh, I'm so happy to be compared to those people. And then Marquez said, you know, I have 20 other opponents on the grid, so I'm not really too fussed. But obviously, everything changes when those visors do come down, and who knows what could happen in the Commercial Bank Grand Prix of Qatar, the first race of the year. But before we get into MotoGP, there is, of course, World Superbikes. They were in Thailand for their second round of the year, the third and fourth race. The Buriram circuit that had undergone some resurfacing since we Superbikes were last there. But big surprise was Michael Vandermark on pole. I believe he's the first ever Dutch rider to grab a super pole. He was ahead of Sykes and Ray, so that's pretty impressive from the Dutchman. You know, he looked really strong in Phillip Island, and we were a bit uncertain about how his form would carry over to a circuit like a Buriram in Thailand. And it looks like that, you know, Phillip Island was no fluke for 400. It looks like they have taken a decent little step. You know, their speed was 300.8 k's an hour, which was the same top speed as Tom Sykes. Chaz Davies and the Ducatis were really struggling. Obviously, you know, the Ducati being a twin and everything, 299.2 top speed for Davies. Really bad for Josh Brooks. Brooks, who qualified 13th, disappointing for Brooks. He was 291.9. But I believe that the slowest top speed of a sort of competitive rider. You know, obviously Peter Sebastian, he had the lowest, no, sorry, one of the Thai wildcards had the lowest speed, but anyway. Yeah, difficult for Leon Kamier, 290.3 k's an hour. So Kamier, 10.5 k's an hour down on even Michael Vandermark, and with Burry Ram having such a long straight, top speed really did help out this weekend. So that's definitely where some guys like Davies were struggling, as we'll get to a second in the race. But yeah, speaking of Davies, he headed up the second row in fourth, ahead of Sylvain Gintoli, and then Davide Squiggly Gigliano was in sixth, Nicky Hayden eighth behind Lowe's, and then Reiterberger completing the top three rows. Carol Abraham 11th, that was quite good, as I said. Brooks 13th. Leon Kamier, who had led FP1 surprisingly enough, he was in 14th, with Alex De Angelis still struggling a fair bit, down in 19th position. And then we got on to the races. Both races, I thought, were actually really good in World Superbike. You know, building on the great races that we had in Phillip Island, sort of confirming a lot of things that we learned in Phillip Island. One of the main things is that the Kawasaki's maybe not clearly the strongest bike, but the Kawasaki's definitely have an advantage. The other thing we learned from both races is that both turns 3 and turn 8 at the Burry Ram circuit are incredibly difficult and have very little grip. Overall, it seemed like the track was struggling a lot for grip. There are a lot of riders moving around a lot. It didn't really seem pleasant to ride. Obviously, then also the heat and humidity. If you go on Michael Vandermark's Twitter, he has a little whiteboard drawing with some numbers about how much weight he lost over the weekend. And it's a surprising amount, you know, quite noticeable. But the first race, as we said, was really good. You know, Vandermark started from pole, had a terrible start. That Honda seems quite difficult to start compared to the other bikes. Nicky Hayden also had quite a poor start. But Sykes broke away a tiny bit, and then Ray was following him. Ray was closing, and then a really nice battle broke out between the two in the closing, like, 5 or so laps, I think it was. You know, Sykes put up a pretty good fight, but once Johnny got ahead, he was sort of able to just eke out an advantage and then eventually end 0.222 ahead of his teammate. Therefore, Ray had made it 3 out of 3 victories for 2016. So a really good showing from him. Michael Vandermark, he was third, 9.6 seconds back on Ray in the lead. Vandermark, as I said, recovered from that pretty poor start and, you know, got past guys like Davies and just rode really well. You know, Vandermark's now consistently finished towards the top of the World Superbike grid, which is something that I don't think we expected from a Honda at this day and age. But it proves that, you know, not only have Tencate developed that Honda well and, you know, done whatever necessary changes they've needed to, but also that the new rules that they've introduced into Superbike, which, you know, Tom Sykes didn't like last year because of how it changed the engine. It does seem that, you know, the new rules in World Superbike are helping more bikes to be competitive. You know, when we say more bikes, it was sort of the Honda and the Suzuki that were the only two bikes that weren't really able to mix it up too much. Obviously, Suzuki now gone from Supers. But yeah, Honda doing well. Chaz Davies was fourth. As I said, you know, he was quite far down on the top speed, so really struggled. But he and Squiggly Gigliano did have a really great battle. They were going at it as hard, if not harder, than the two Kawasaki boys up front. Giuliano eventually did crash towards the end of the race and therefore finished down in 18th. One thing that does seem quite clear in World Superbike is that most of the teammates are pretty evenly matched. You know, you had the two Kawasaki's fighting. You sort of had the two Hondas fighting, not really. You had Davies and Giuliano fighting until Giuliano fell off. Reiterberger and Torres were more or less within touching distance. Then Lowe's and Gintoli, they were fighting as well. Then, you know, De Angelis and Salvadori, they were pretty close. So it seems like all those teammates are pretty evenly matched, and that, you know, the Kawasaki seems to be on a level slightly above that of the Ducati. I can't tell if the Ducati's higher or lower than the Honda. I'd say that overall, I'd probably put the Ducati team a bit higher than the Honda team if we're ranking teams. But, you know, Kawi first, Ducati factory second, then Honda third. Then again, BMW and Yamaha both pretty close, especially that Altea BMW team. It seems like they've really hit the ground running compared to the Milwaukee squad. Again, Yamaha had maybe not the best weekend. You know, they're still a new team and it's still on a new bike. So sixth for Lowe's and seventh for Gintoli isn't too bad. Really good showing from Reiterberger in fifth, actually. Forgot to mention that. But yeah, the Yamaha is slowly getting there, but I think that it's going to be a long year for Yamaha, and that hopefully in the second half of the year and when they get to some of the European tracks, especially the British tracks, that Lowe's will be able to do well, and that, you know, we know that Gintoli goes well at the end of a season, especially at places like Qatar. So hopefully they can get there towards the end. But, you know, finishing 20 and 24 seconds back on the race winner, that's not anywhere near podium pace. And I thought that Yamaha would be able to get on the podium at some point this season, maybe not in these first two rounds, so maybe we're being a bit too quick. Alex De Angelis in ninth, good result from him ahead of his teammate Lorenzo Salvadori. Leon Camus 11th, so pretty good result for Camus on that MV, given everything with that. Romano Ramos 12th, Bayoko, who replaces Fabio Mengi, who's broken his hip, he was 13th, Edo Forres. Josh Brooks, disappointing 15th, Josh Brooks was not happy with the weekend at all, really struggling with the bike. And then there was a DNF for Nicky Hayden due to an electrical fault. Unfortunately, even with some creative mathematics, I cannot say that race one was good for Nicky Hayden. Really sorry about that, Nicky, but, you know, DNF and a third from your teammate, that doesn't equal you on the honorary Motopod podium. Hopefully you can do better at the next round. But before that, Hayden was, you know, fighting more or less around where Reiterberger, Lowe's, Gintoli and Torres were. So he was, you know, inside the top 10. But, you know, pretty reasonable start to Hayden's time in World Superbikes. I think that, you know, pretty much everyone from Hayden to Honda knew that, you know, this year's maybe not about learning, but definitely about, you know, just getting a good groundwork in. And then, you know, next year when this rumored Honda comes out, that, you know, then they can really twist some screws and try and make Hayden that first ever MotoGP and World Superbike champion. And yeah, I mean, you know, as we keep saying, Hayden, along with Johnny Ray, is just one of those guys who everyone seems to like. So I'm all in favor of him doing that. So that was race one. Then we went on to race two. Race two was an even better battle than we had in race one. Just when you thought it couldn't get any better, bam, it does. Yet again, it was the two green machines out at the front, hammering at each other, just bam, 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 especially towards the end of the race. Sykes and Ray just going at each other, hard as you like. I still can't quite tell if those two seriously hate each other or just sort of hate each other. You know, in the first race, Ray shook his head after one of Sykes's pass. And then, you know, Sykes was going really hard on Ray in this second race. He was stuffing it up the inside and making Ray go all over the place. In both races, actually, Johnny Ray did not look comfortable at all. You know, he was braking as hard as he could, you know, rear wheel Marquez style up in the air, flapping around, and he was running on a lot. As we said, that's probably down lots of it that due to the grip of the Thai circuit. But yeah, Sykes was just going for it, and you know, those last three laps were really, really good. And as we said, you know, this is continuing on not only the results we more or less saw in Phillip Island, but also the great racing we saw. And it's really good that World Superbikes is having some good racing again, because, you know, as we've talked about a fair bit on the podcast, there were some rough years for World Superbike, just like there were some rough years for MotoGP. You know, every sport, especially motorsport, is maybe not secular, but I guess secular is the right word. You know, it ebbs and flows. It can be some tough times, but luckily, as I said, like MotoGP, it does seem like Superbike is now coming out of that due to the rule changes. The race format, yet again, I didn't watch the races live, so I still can't really tell you if the race format is a big thing or not. But yeah, I don't know. Overall, everything seems to be going a bit better for World Superbikes. Chaz Davies was in third. He was just not quite able to really ever have a big proper go at Sykes and Ray. He had one sort of lunge, and at one point I thought that Sykes and Ray were going to take each other out, so I thought, oh yeah, Davies has this. But no, Davies couldn't. He was third. Tom Sykes taking his first win of the season and breaking Jonathan Ray's win streak. So it was Sykes, Ray, and Davies on the podium. But Davies was pleased. You know, Davies came into this weekend knowing that this track didn't suit the Ducati. As we said, you know, Ducati really struggling for top end speed. So Davies was happy with the third, and that he said, you know, Sure, Philip Island wasn't the best with the crash, and then he obviously remounted, but you know, still not the best with the crash. But Davies said, "No, we can go from here. We can build. They're going to Aragon next. Aragon, a circuit where Davies always goes really well. Got the Panigale's first win there last year, I believe. I was actually talking with Greg Haynes, the World Superbike commentator, about this, and I thought that Chaz Davies had done the double a couple of times at Aragon, but no." Greg reminded me that it was only in 2013, I believe, when Chaz was with the BMW squad that he did the double. So, yeah, a bit surprising that Davies hasn't done the double there more often, but I definitely expect Davies to be on both those podiums and certainly fighting with the likes of Jonathan and Tom. Michael Vandermark, he was fourth, 5 seconds off the winner. Vandermark not quite able to recreate what he did in race one. Nicky Hayden was in fifth, much better race from Hayden, but unfortunately 5 seconds back on his teammate, so some work to do. Interestingly enough, Jonathan Ray was the only rider into the 133s that entire race. Everyone else was doing mid to low 134s. Hayden's fastest lap was 0.3 slower than Michael Vandermark, so it does seem like Michael Vandermark's year of experience on that bike, and obviously, you know, just his whole experience of mostly racing production motorcycles is paying off, as Hayden still is settling into that. We had Sylvain Guintoli in sixth, disappointing race for his teammate Lowe's. Lowe's had a technical problem, so suffered another DNF. Really, the Brit, former British World Superbike champion, was not happy about that. Been a really tough start to the season for Lowe's, definitely tougher than I think he was expecting. But, you know, it can only go up from here. So Guintoli was in sixth. Reiterberger, again, top BMW. So Reiterberger doing really well ahead of his teammate. Torres was just behind him yet again. Another brilliant fight from them. As I said, you know, it's teammate, first and second. Davies, third on his own. Then fourth and fifth, two Hondas. Then, you know, seventh and eighth, we have two BMWs. We have Lorenzo Salvadori, again, ninth. Davide Giuliano, 10th. Camier, again, 11th. So good from him. Abraham and Brooks were 15th and 16th. Brooks, unfortunately, not scoring any points. So pretty disappointing race from him. But yeah, overall, as I keep saying, it was just a really good, solid weekend of World Superbike action. And I implore any of you out there who haven't watched Superbikes to go out there and, you know, watch Phillip Island and also watch the Bury Ram round. I think that both races were all four races, both rounds, I should say, rather, were really, really good. And that, you know, I think that if you were, I can't quite remember, unfortunately I've forgotten the name of the listener who wrote in saying that they hadn't watched Superbikes for a while and were watching it because of Nikki. But if you are in a similar position to that listener, I think that, you know, these opening four races should hopefully ignite some fire in your belly for World Superbike racing. I mean, you know, personally me, I'm still probably not going to, you know, miss going out on a Saturday for a nice lunch to watch World Superbike as I would maybe MotoGP, but it's definitely something that, you know, it's not a chore to watch World Superbikes, you know, the Monday after using the worldsuperbike.com website. You know, I enjoy watching the racing, and yeah, I'm really positive about World Superbikes. I think that it's now back to being great racing, and I just hope that now it can start to get the fans in to keep that great racing going. So with that, we then come to the World Superbike Championship standings. Jonathan Ray leading the way with 95 points. Again, when I was talking to Greg, he said that this is the exact number of points that Jonathan Ray had at this point last year. I haven't had time to check that, but that could very well be true. And 95 points is 29 points, already a whole race win ahead of his teammate, Tom Sykes, number 66 with 66 points. Michael Vandermark in third, great from him, 65 points. So that battle for second, it's disappointing to say that the championship already looks wrapped up at the second round, but 29 points ahead is solid for Ray. But yeah, that battle for second looks good. Again, Tom Sykes, Michael Vandermark third, Chaz Davies, great result from him in fourth with 55 points. Sylvain Guintoli fifth, solid result from him. Giuliano in sixth, ahead of Torres, Hayden, Reiterberger, and Camier, Leon Camier, inside the top 10 in the World Superbike standings. Camier with 19 points. Reiterberger, who is ahead in ninth, has 28. So it does, there is quite a bit of a step there, 9 points. But not as big as Ray, who already leads by 29 points. As I just alluded to, I think that Ray is the man to beat again, and that it would take some pretty serious work from the likes of Tom Sykes and Chaz Davies to beat him. Both riders are definitely capable of beating him on a weekend. But I think that, with World Superbikes, Ray can just, knock out those second places and win when he can. And that, even a gap of 29 points, if he were to finish in 5 times 6 is 30. If he were to finish second to Tom Sykes 6 times, then Tom Sykes would still only be leading by 1 point. So Tom Sykes basically has to do the double in the next 3 rounds, which is it's a bit of an ask considering how strong Jonathan has already shown he can be. While the championship may not be super close, the racing at least is. And, that's probably what's most important. At the end of the day, the championship table is just a bunch of numbers on a web page. So who really cares? But then we move on to the lightweight class in World Superbikes, the World Supersport class. And it was Jules Clouzel on pole position for the first time ahead of Randy Krumenacher, who again beat out his teammate Kenan Sofwagoglu. PJ Jacobsen was in fourth ahead of Baldellini. Kyle Smith, the top Honda, in sixth. Good result from him. Rathipong Willerot, the brother of Ratapark Willerot, he was seventh as he wildcards. Nico Tirole in eighth ahead of Gino Reyer in ninth. And then reigning British Supersport champion Luke Stapleford was in 10th. So good result for him. Most of those usual players towards the front there in Super pole for World Supersport. Then we got to the race. The race was another really aggressive race. Kenan Sofwagoglu continues his reputation of being, from all accounts, a really nice guy off track. But on track, when that visor comes down, boy oh boy, did him and PJ Jacobsen get stuck into it. I much like with Sykes and Ray, I thought that there was going to be someone coming off their motorcycle at some point. But luckily, everyone did stay upright. But boy oh boy, Kenan Sofwagoglu sure does give it out, but PJ Jacobsen is happy to give it right back to him, and I think that that's exactly what World Supersport needs. Their fighting did allow Jules Clouzel to gain a bit of an edge, and Clouzel did take his maiden win of the year ahead of Sofwagoglu and PJ Jacobsen. So with Krumenacher down in fourth, that does tighten up the championship a fair bit. Anthony West, who was on the podium in Phillip Island, not at this round, and then Caracasulo, who was also on that podium, he was down in 17th. So it's all chop and change in World Supersport. Krumenacher fourth, as I said, Kyle Smith fifth, Zulfami Karadeniz surprisingly up there in seventh place. Great result from him. Gino Reyer inside the top 10 in ninth. Luke Stapleford 14th. Aidan Wagner 15th. 18th, Robbie Rolfo, our favourite old gentleman rider, was in 18th, unfortunately, and 40.6 seconds off the winner. As I said, that does tighten up the championship a fair bit. Randy Krumenacher is in first position overall with 38 points. Never in my life did I think that I would say that Randy Krumenacher was leading an International Motorcycle Racing Championship, but there you go, 38 points for the Swissman. Swissman? Yeah, Swissman. PJ Jacobsen, he is second with 27, so just 11 points separating them. Much more reasonable number than 29. Actually, all of the top 12 riders in World Supersport are closer than Jonathan Rea and Tom Sykes. Obviously, Supersport have had half as many races, but still. Krumenacher, Jacobsen, Jules Clouzel now moves up into third, 25 points for the victory. Obviously, he unfortunately couldn't finish in Phillip Island. Then Kenan Sofwagoglu in turn moves into fourth, 20 points yet again. Sofwagoglu couldn't finish in Phillip Island. Caracasulo, who failed to score, he drops to fifth. Baldellini is sixth. Anthony West, still seventh overall with 16 points ahead of Gino Reyer, Jacques, and Gamarino. Zulfami Karadeniz 11th, Carl 11th, Kyle Smith 12th, and then Michael Levy, the wild card from Phillip Island, with a lone point down there. Luke Stapleford 2 points, and yeah, that's World Supersport. It definitely seems like Krumenacher, Randy Krumenacher, PJ Jacobsen, and Jules Clouzel, and Kenan Sofwagoglu will be involved in that title fight. I don't think that anyone really has an edge. It's still a bit too early to say. Obviously, Seforoglu definitely has the advantage in terms of experience. Cluzel has a bit more experience in Worlds of Sport than PJ Jacobson, and I think that maybe the MV is a bit of a stronger bike than the Honda CBR 600. But, you know, PJ Jacobson is definitely a determined rider. He's one of those guys who, you know, PJ's not really posting all those happy photos to Instagram. You know, if PJ Jacobson's in third, then it's, oh, well, guys, you know, everything sucks. And, you know, hopefully I'm pretty sure I can do it on race day, but, you know, this isn't good enough, even though, you know, he's still qualified in on the front row or whatever. So I think PJ definitely has the determination to do it. And then Randy Krumenacker, even as a rookie, I think that he could. You know, he has a lot of motorcycle racing experience. He raced in Moto2 for pretty much every year that championship existed. And, you know, even though the last years were a bit dud for Krumenacker, he did have some okay rides. And sure, he never got on the podium, but he was, when he was sort of air quotes teammates to Stefan Bradl when they're in that Stefan Kiefer / Grand Prix Racing Switzerland team. He had some good rides. I mean, you know, he wasn't the be all end all of Moto2, but you know, as we've said before, that Randy Krumenacker, just like Nico Tirol, Sandro Cortese, is one of these riders who, you know, stepped up to Moto2 and then just got absolutely steamrolled, and then got lost in the constant washing machine of mid to low tier Moto2 teams and could never pull himself back out. So good to see Krumenacker leading. In summary. The next World Superbike / World Supersport / Superstock 1000 round is in Aragon in 2 weeks' time, so just after the MotoGP round, I believe. The weekend after. And yeah, I'm looking forward to it again. Aragon produces great racing, especially in World Superbike. You know, that long straight, and then those two fast left-handers onto the home finish straight. That produces some great racing, and then, you know, the air quotes Aragon chicane, that nice flip-flop, that's all good work there too. So yeah, I'll definitely be tuning into World Superbike, and once again, I do recommend that everyone out there does so as well. Then we move on to testing. We had Moto2 and Moto3 out in Qatar, at the LaSalle International Circuit, for 3 days of testing. Moto2 had their official engines in. Axel Pons, I'll just say now, he finished the test in 26th. He missed the last 2 days of testing as he was still recovering from his crash in Jerez that he had after setting the fastest ever lap around Jerez and being a second under the lap record. So yeah, as I said, not stock engines, but the proper race engines. They were race engines that were a bit old, so some riders, Miguel Oliveira, in particular, he had one or two engine problems, but it was Sam Lowes who led the weekend. On the first 2 days, he just put in lap after lap after lap, and he was always inside the top three, but was never quite able to crack and get into that top spot. But it was Lowes on top with a 159.405, which was faster than his pole time from last year. So looking good for the Brit. He said that he's feeling really comfortable on that Gresini Kallax machine, and that, you know, he can't really wait to get going. You know, he said he doesn't have to take as many risks or push as hard as when he was on the speed up. And I think that Lowes could challenge for the championship. As I mentioned last show, 2 years with Aprilia after this, I don't know. But that's still a long way away. You know, let's focus on Moto2 for now. For me, Lowes, along with Rins, Folger, and Zarco, goes in as a title favourite. Those four are my title favourites for Moto2. Folger, most or many people might see as a bit of a surprise, but Folger has shown in both Moto3 and in Moto2 before that he's capable of winning races. It's just that, especially in Moto2, he's never had the best teams. And I think that Dynavolt Intact GP team are a really, really good team, and that Sandro Cortese just hasn't quite been able to deliver. But I think that with Jonas Folger, they could challenge for a title. Folger obviously won the 2015 race, 2015 Moto2 race in Qatar, after Lowes fell off, and then Zarco had some technical problems. And Jonas Folger was third overall with a 159.652. Quarter of a second back on Lowes. So I think that Folger could be up there as well. Tom Lutie was second. Lutie, Yeah, I don't know. He's been in Moto2 forever and never really set the world on fire. Maybe this will be his year. Then Alex Rins was fourth. Bit of a slow and steady test for Rins. I believe it was the second day, or maybe no, it was the first day. It was the first day that Alex Rins led the test. So good showing from him. Rins proved last year that he can challenge for victories, and I don't think that anything will have changed this year. Lorenzo Baldessari, really good from him in fifth. Bit of a surprise there as well. I don't think that Baldessari will challenge for the championship, but I think he could definitely be in there for some pretty steady podiums. Maybe even a race win or two. Still a bit hard to tell. Obviously, in Moto2, anything can happen. We saw Nakagami finish second that year and then get disqualified for an illegal air filter and then suddenly not be able to finish inside the top 10 ever again. But now Nakagami's back and in sixth. So, Moto2 continues to be that wild ride of will they, won't they? Sandro Cortese in seventh ahead of Johann Zarco, the world champion, down in eighth and half a second back on Lowe's. Not quite great from Zarco. Yeah, I don't know. Zarco is one of these dudes who I heard people saying that Zarco doesn't have any timing screens in his pits. Well, he does, but whenever Zarco comes back into the pits, his team turn off the timing screens and turn off the screens because Zarco doesn't care what anyone else is doing. Zarco works on him. So, maybe Zarco won't be too fussed with eighth. He and the team did what they needed to do and good enough. I also learned that Johann Zarco doesn't have a driver's license. So for any Motorpod fans out there who are like me and have yet to get their driver's license, don't feel too bad because a world champion did or doesn't. Alex Marquez, who's ninth, Alex Marquez probably didn't have his driving license when he won that Moto3 World Championship. Good for Marquez to be ninth, even though he does have that still slightly injured hand. It is healing quite well, but still not from perfect. Marquez was ahead of Franco Morbidelli. Morbidelli, definitely someone who people were expecting a lot from, but hasn't really shown anything during testing. Bit disappointing, in all honesty, for Morbidelli. Obviously, it all counts come Sunday, so he could turn it around. But Morbidelli said that he's having just a bit of trouble adjusting to how the Mark VDS team work and, settling into to how they do things. Especially in Moto2, where now it's basically a stock class where everyone's on a 2016 Kalex. It's only Matteo Pessini and Alessandro Tonucci who aren't on 2016 Kalexes. They're on the 2015 for Pessini and 2014 for Tonucci. So yeah, as I was saying, with everything being so similar, teams, how you interact with the team, how you give data back to the team, and then how the team handle that data, becomes, almost as important as how you're riding the motorcycle. So it's not only the rider that can make the difference in Moto2, but it's also the team. And I think that team especially is what a lot of people don't pay enough attention to. If you're a world championship team, you're going to probably attract the best mechanics. If you're a well-supported team like Australia Galicia Mark VDS, then you're going to be able to attract the best mechanics because you can pay for the best mechanics. So I really do think that the teams do play a big part. One new team that is doing quite well is Leopard Racing. Danny Kent in 11th. Obviously, Leopard Racing, the sponsor's new to Moto2, but that Moto2 team is basically the exact same team that Stefan Bradl won the Moto2 World Championship with, Kiefer Racing. I'm actually quite surprised that Danny Kent's in 11th. In all honesty, I didn't think that Danny Kent would be doing so well in Moto2. I thought that after Danny Kent's incredible drop-off in form in the last half of 2015, that was sort of going to be the Danny Kent we were going to see. Certainly before 2015, the Danny Kent at the end of 2015 was the Danny Kent we'd seen before, where he was capable of podiums, but when push came to shove, he didn't really seem to have that aggression to then, go from being third to being first. But no, Kent's adapting well, 11th, ahead of Simone Corsi, the top speed up and top non-Kalex bike, in 12th. Marcel Schrotter, he was 13th. Then Dominic Agata, come to Agata in 14th. Not an outstanding result from Agata, 14th, but Dominic Agata was testing some winglets. Winglets, love them or hate them, think they're winglets, strakes, or whatever. It seems like they're not only here to stay, but they're multiplying. Now, you may think that Dominic Agata was running some air quotes standard winglets at the front of the motorcycle, looking like some cool horns on a walrus. That's what we'll call the winglets. Yeah, anyway, so you may think they were winglets out the front, but no, they were winglets out the back on his tail unit. I wouldn't really even call them winglets. They were sort of like two horns hanging down. I'll try and include something in the show notes if I can find a clear picture of this. But yeah, so the idea of these air quotes winglets was that they would disrupt the airflow behind the bike, therefore create dirty air, which would mean that someone slipstreaming, you can't use a slipstream as well. At a track like Qatar, this is quite a big deal. Kilometer long straight, a slipstream can be a really big difference. Lots of people saying that, oh, you know, this isn't what aerodynamics should be. Aerodynamics should help you, but not negatively affect your opponents. And, you know, at first I thought, oh, you know, you're just talking like Honda, spirit of the rules, yada, yada, yada. But the more I've sort of read about it, I definitely think that, yeah, that's sort of true, that, you know, if a winglet will help you, fair enough. But if you're putting something on your bike deliberately to mess with your competitors, I don't think that's right. You know, why not just stick spikes on the wheels? Obviously don't do that. That's incredibly dangerous. But yeah, winglets, you know, whew, they're on the front of the bike. They're on the back of the bike. Some bikes have two, some bikes have four, some bikes have six. Maybe we'll just start racing aeroplanes. Maybe that's the answer to all of this, is just Moto2, the aeroplane class, get some nice, some of those nice biplanes in there. Those would be quite fun to watch race. You could have two riders, you know, one rider could be on top and the two riders on top of the plane could fight or something. That seems pretty cool. Anyway, Hafiz Siren was 15th, Matteo Pessini 16th, Julian Simon 17th, and then Luca Marini, Valentino Rossi's half-brother, he was 24th, Jesco Raffin 27th, Efren Vazquez 30th, and 4.7 seconds off the pace. Pretty disappointing for Vazquez, but as the only pseudo rider on the grid, it's definitely an uphill battle for him. And then we move on to Moto3, where times were absolutely bonkers. I was on the second day that Livio Loi broke the outright circuit record set by Alexi Masbou in 2014, but it would be Nicola Antonelli who led the test and set a new unofficial lap record time. Obviously, all lap records are only recorded and do only count from a race weekend. So this is an unofficial time, 205.444 for Nicolò Antonelli, the Italian, leading the way ahead of Livio Loi. Loi looking really, really strong. Loi backing up his second day result by going even faster on the third day and proving that he wasn't just a one-hit wonder. So that was a Honda 1-2. Then in third was Fabio Quartararo on the KTM with Leopard Racing. Quartararo, I think that Quartararo and Antonelli will be in the title hunt. I also think that Jorge Navarro will be in the title hunt. And I hope that for the sake of his career, Romano Fenati will be in the title hunt. I also think that Brad Binder will be in the title hunt. It's Moto3, so I'm also going to say Ennea Bastianini will be in the title hunt. You know, the top nine in Moto3 last year at Qatar was the closest ever top nine finish in motorcycle racing history, I believe. But anyway, Antonelli led from Livio Loi, Fabio Quartararo third, Jorge Navarro fourth, Brad Binder fifth, Nicolò Belega, a rookie who's never raced at this circuit, sixth, and under the lap record. So pretty good from Belega. Aaron Canet, another rookie, also from the CEV Junior World Championship. He was seventh, just behind Belega. Both him, Belega, and Juan Mir, who was ninth. All three of those riders fought for the Junior World Championship last year, with Belega coming out on top. So the FIM Servo Repsol Junior World Championship clearly producing top quality riders, with their three championship contenders now inside the top 10. Romano Fenati was eighth. As I said, I really hope that Fenati can fight for that title, because Fenati, Brad Binder, and Jakob Kornfeil are the three racers who have ridden in every single Moto3 race since the class's inception, and none of them have really put on a proper title fight. So it's sort of time to put up or shut up, as they say, for those three riders. But I think that Binder and Fenati can be in that mix. Kornfeil was 11th. Still a bit uncertain about Kornfeil. Philip Ertl 10th. Juan Fran Guevara, the top Mahindra. No, Guevara's not on a Mahindra anymore. What am I saying? Sorry about that one, everyone. Guevara? Guevara, God, I can't speak. Guevara was 12th on the RBA Racing Team KTM. The RBA Racing Team is the ugliest bike on the World Championship grid. It is blue, white, and yellow. If you haven't seen it, I implore you to go check out Gabriel Rodrigo or Juan Fran Guevara's Twitters or Instagrams and see how truly terrible that motorcycle looks. I am one who has been known to wear clothes that I know look terrible in some sort of weird, ironic, I hate myself sort of way. But no, that bike is just ugly. Andrea Bastianini, 13th. Disappointing from the Italian, but I think he can do it. I hope. Bo Benschneider, another rookie, obviously Red Bull Rookies Cup reigning champion. He was 14th ahead of Andrea Locatelli on the Leopard Racing Machine. So all three Leopard Racing bikes inside the top 15, not bad. Gabriel Rodrigo. Now we get to the top, Mahindra. Not Juan Fran Guevara, but his former teammate Jorge Martin in 17th. The Mahindra is now rocking winglets, as we said. I did some digging, and the Mahindra winglets, they're not to help with anti-wheelie on that massively powerful single-cc, 250cc engine. Not single-cc, single-cylinder, 250cc engine. But what Mahindra, or what people in the paddock claim, is that the winglets on the Mahindra help keep the bike stable through fast corners. Maybe that's true, maybe that's not. I don't know. I don't know much about aerodynamics. I did a law degree, not an engineering degree. Maybe someone out there in Motopod land knows better than I do. Maria Herrera, she was in 18th. Carol Haneke was 26th. Alexi Masbou was 29th. Have John McPhee on the Peugeot brackets Mahindra bikes. And then, yeah, that was pretty much it. You know, apart from guys like Canet, like Mir, and like Belega being inside that top 10, and I guess Livio Lloyd to a certain extent. Yeah, there weren't too many surprises in Moto3, but as I said, I reckon that'll be between Antonelli, Quartararo, Navarro, and then probably Fanardi and Bastianini for the championship. I think that's all the riders I said, right? I don't know, maybe my prediction changed since going through that list. And then all those times I read out for Moto3 and for Moto2 were the combined times across the 3 days. And obviously MotoGP.com does have a more detailed breakdown of those times if you want. So now we move on to Harry Lloyd's predictions for the 2016 MotoGP World Championship. As I said, these could be career-ending, depending on how dramatically wrong they are. But I think that Jorge Lorenzo will be your 2016 MotoGP World Champion. He's looked incredibly strong throughout testing, and I think that unless something serious happens throughout the season, that it seems like Lorenzo's style and the Yamaha have just gelled with the new tyres and the electronics a lot better than anyone else. I think that second in the championship will again be Valentino Rossi. I don't think the contest will be as close as it was in 2015. And then third overall, I think, will be Andrea Iannone ahead of Marc Marquez, with Maverick Vinales then fifth. That's my top five in MotoGP. I think that Scott Redding will be on the podium in Qatar is my other... That prediction of all the predictions seems the most likely to be wrong. But I'd love to be proved wrong. You know, all the riders said that on paper, the championship looks a lot closer and a lot more difficult for them to win than in years past. And I hope that they're right. I hope that it's a type championship. I hope that we see a lot of different riders battling. The other big thing is that today on Spanish TV, Alex Cruvier was saying that one of the biggest things, and Jorge Lorenzo backed this up in the press conference, was that riders still don't really know how the Michelin tires heat up under race conditions. They've done race runs and stuff like that, but Jorge Lorenzo said that, you know, for those first five or six laps, we're going to have to be a bit careful. Because, you know, in years past, after Bridgestone had that huge issue with the tyres not heating up, and if they weren't hot, you'd just get high-sided to the moon and back and end up like Valentino Rossi with a broken leg. The Bridgestone tyres did heat up really, really fast, and riders were able to push basically from 100% from the first corner. You know, that was sort of Jorge Lorenzo's specialty, was making the tyre work and then, you know, being a second head on the first lap. But I don't think that Lorenzo is going to be able to do that, or that any rider is going to be able to do that. And I think that Qatar could be a bit of a crash fest come race day. As I record this, it's currently raining, or at least was raining when I started recording in Qatar. And that'll remove any rubber that had been laid down by Moto2 and Moto3. And they'll have to do it all again all over the weekend. And with these unknown Michelin tyres, I think that in the Premier class, it could be a battle of who can stay up the longest. I think that the Ducatis will be strong. I think that it'll be quite similar to the race last year. I think it'll be two Ducatis versus two factory Yamahas. I think that it'll be Iannone and Redding battling towards there. I think that the Repsol Hondas will have to, and probably Crutchlow as well. Yeah, Repsol Hondas plus Crutchlow. I think that they'll have to battle with Vinales, and I think that's more or less how the first race of the year will go. So yeah, as I said, that's all those predictions are probably wrong, and you can demand my resignation from motorcycle racing at the end of the year. please don't do that. I quite like working in motorcycle racing. But anyway, now on to the most important part of the show. The only reason we actually do Motopod is for this. It is, of course, the MCN Motorcycle Fantasy League. The points seem a bit more stable than last race because, as we said, the points changed about six times, it seemed like. So hopefully these points are right. Certainly Tom Sid with Sid's Sandbaggers will be hoping they are right, as he leads on actually a five-way points tie, but for some reason the game has given Sid the overall lead. So Sid leads with 278 points ahead of Thias Racing with Giuliano Lupitelli, also 278. Then Ducati Doug Moore, 278, he's third. NorCal GP, Peter Williams, he's fourth. Then pick a score, any score, winky face, I like the winky face, from Gregory Smith. He is fifth. As I said, all of those guys, and girls maybe, I'm not sure, 278 points tied at the top. I'm just going to quickly check. The top teams overall have 288 points, and that is Peter Bell and Ailt Racing, and that's overall out of all of the MCN League. So those guys in Motopod are inside the top 20 overall, which is pretty good. Pretty good for Motopod. Unfortunately, the Motopod hosts are not doing so well. Martin Darlington has regained his, air quotes, rightful place at the top of the Motopod host league. And although he wasn't able to be with us this show, he did want me to point out that he was now at the top of the league, ahead of Team Motodog, 78. With 204 points, Martin Darlington with Huge Ass Racing has 231. Then the other thing Martin wanted me to point out was that Dipper Racing, i.e. Dave the Dipper Neal, in 83rd with 176 points, has now overtaken me. I am now second last with 153 points, 91st. That's a big distance to Martin. Not going to lie, I think this could be another year where we rely on the BSB team to pull us through. We can only hope and pray. You know, as we said before, you can change your team pretty much every race weekend. So if you're like me and sort of getting your ass handed to you, then might be an idea to go change. And then in 151st place is Moto Len with 25 points. I think that's 25 points. Actually, I can't remember if I updated Len's points. Len's last out of the hosts, guys. Like, that's all there is to that joke. There's not even a joke there anymore. Anyway, MotoGP. Hey, it's back, guys. Woo, MotoGP. So yeah, MotoGP is this weekend. Then, as we said, the weekend after, we have World Superbikes in Thailand. I think it's something like 21 days, maybe 20 days when this show goes up till BSB starts, and then something pretty similar, more or less, maybe a bit more, for Moto America. So we are now well and truly into the racing season. Let's hope that the rain goes away at Qatar, because otherwise we're going to have to race on Monday again, like that one year. And yeah, I'm really excited. I was sort of dreading the season before it started, especially that first press conference. I thought that everything was going to be sepang. But luckily, no, everyone's just excited to get into 2016. Let's dive into the unknown. We don't know what these electronics are going to do. We don't know what these tires are going to do. And it's going to make for the best season ever. My name is Harry Lloyd. I've been your spirit guide / host for this almost hour-long show by myself. I'm not quite sure how I did it. I've barely drank any of my iced coffee. I'm quite disappointed that I haven't had my iced coffee, so I think I'm going to go drink it now. And till next week, it's Zoom Zoom from Harry Lloyd. Zoom, 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 zoom. There, Martin, I hope you're happy. Bye.